after doing it that long and being in the homicide business for 21 plus years, the people that are affected by it, the families, the loved ones, the relatives, those are the people that really have carried a heavy weight over the years.
You know, this kind of gives you a jolt, you know, a rush of adrenaline that, you know, I'm like, wow, these people got my back no matter what. To have something like that, you know, makes the hair in the back of your neck stand up.
It eventually got thrown in my hands. Very sad story. We have an unidentified child with no head and nobody missing a child. But it's ongoing. There is really no names to give because right. We don't know. Yeah.
Welcome back, listeners, to the Brighter Side of Blue, our worldwide podcast.
Uh-huh.
Coming to you live from our outdoor studio in St. Louis Hills. It's the 2024 eclipse. I'm Danny.
I'm Tommy.
I'm JJ.
And we have a special guest that's going to join us throughout the whole podcast, counting down the hours to ending a 37-year career, Brian McGlynn. Sergeant Brian McGlynn, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yep, welcome to the eclipse. You got your goggles ready, I hope, because those things won't cut it, those sunglasses.
I won't be looking.
Brian's career is completely eclipsed now.
So we're not quite in the path of totality, but this podcast is in the path of futility.
Futility?
Yeah, that's a bad word.
Yeah, that's a bad choice of words.
No, it's what I meant.
Hostility.
Yeah, we were. Hey, good, Tommy.
Hostility is where we're at. On Jack Shorts, they're killing it on TikTok, and the haters are out. They are out, and they're coming strong. And we've had, what have we had, 500,000 views in the last week? 750,000 views in the last week on our.
Wow.
And TikTok loves meth. They are eating up Jason Grellner's Science of Meth and all his meth descriptions and stories. We had some meth cooks on there debating the best way to cook meth.
The best recipes.
Yes. And it was just fascinating conversation. But we just released, prior to the show, what, an hour and a half ago? We released Danny's short where he mentions that he mentions defund these nuts. And a quick glance of that has the haters unchained, off the chain.
Well, you know how we answer that then? The blue wave's going to kick in.
Yep.
We talked about that earlier.
Yep.
Brian, I don't know. You weren't at the live broadcast of Barney's. Oh, yeah, you were. Yeah, you were. When I talked about the blue wave.
Yeah, you guys gave me a shout out there.
There you go.
Yeah, his mic's a little light, producer John. What do we got?
Need a Bud Light? What?
Yeah, talk right into that.
Now?
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. There we go. Yeah, we're going to start this blue wave from coast to coast, from Singapore all the way to Australia. They might be close, but you know what I'm trying to get.
Geography, I'm kind of geography.
From Indiana all the way to Illinois.
From Indiana to Illinois, we're going to ride the blue wave. But the blue wave is going to have to come out and squash the haters, JJ.
Well, I got
to
ask, it's a shirt we're talking about. It's not defund, it's actually fund these nuts. What are they mad about? The defund?
Well, because they kind of get our double. What do you call it, entendre? They kind of get it.
They don't get that. Double entendre is not in their.
All they're seeing is the defund these nuts.
Right. Do they want to defund the police too? Is that?
Well, that's what we're getting at, JJ.
No. Are they saying anything like that? I haven't read any of the comments.
Oh, no. They are. They would like us not to shoot people in the back.
We would like to do that, not do that as well.
That's why we got body cameras.
Yeah, exactly. Because it doesn't happen.
Right.
They're off the chain. They are mad, and they're letting people know. But the likes got them.
Good.
Oh, really? The likes are winning?
The
blue wave's dominating?
The blue wave is winning. They don't get on and argue it. Well, that goes to your Zen last week, you know, don't argue with stupid people.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
You know, so it kind of leads into how we'll handle that. But we do comment on a lot of people's different posts, the ones that are worth commenting on, because we do like to interact with the fans. John and I and Jack really get on there and talk with people and have fun. And so we do encourage everybody to go to whatever social media you use, like, follow, share, all that good stuff. Right, Jack? Jack doesn't have a mic today.
Hey, Tommy, I'm gonna interrupt you like we don't do, but it is definitely time for an update from producer John on the Eclipse. Because can you see him? People, look at it. This is a bit of history. What do you got?
Well, it seems like somebody took a bite out of the lower right portion of the sun.
So we are in an eclipse right now?
Yes.
What percent? Give us a percent, John.
17.
We're at 7. There's a little bit of history. A podcast live during an eclipse. How are those goggles working, producer John?
It's kind of intensifying it, making it brighter.
Oh, those are the wrong ones.
I got them on backwards.
Right. He'll know better tomorrow.
Yeah, he'll tell us tomorrow.
Who said that?
Hey, you don't mind if we kick it to you for updates on the eclipse once in a while, do we?
I'm on it.
Okay, thank you.
Percentages and whatnot. Stay out of the sun, though. You're our fair-skinned fella.
Yeah, you're a little redhead. You don't do well in the sun.
All right, he's done with us.
He's done. Wait. Keep us on the uplift. You can interrupt if you have any eclipse updates.
Will do.
Okay, thank you. Sergeant McGlynn.
Yes, sir.
So you have about 72 hours left on the job?
About that, yes.
72 hours after 37 years. How do you feel?
I feel like a weight's been taken off my back.
Did it go by fast, 37 years?
It did.
It seems like yesterday, doesn't it? I did 34 and a half, and I can't even believe it.
Yeah, I don't even remember my short time in Berkeley.
that's
ancient history.
How long were you in Berkeley before you came on?
A little less than 2 years, I think, like a year and a half.
So that brings me to a good question. Is when Brian came on, he was the last academy class that you could go to the city or the county or wherever, and he went to Berkeley. But how did you get on the city? Tell us, run that one down. Is that story?
Well, when we went to the academy, it was a friend of mine, Pat Drennan. We both ended up in Berkeley, and we got to be friends with some people with, they say, juice, Chief's son and a lot of commander sons. They didn't have room for just the ordinary folk.
Right.
So we get invited to the chief's son's wedding. So there was some alcohol involved, obviously, and we got an audience with the chief, and we introduced ourselves and told him that we were out in Berkeley, went to the police academy in the city, loved to get to the city, and amazingly, within a couple months, I was in the city. Pat came shortly after, and that's how that went down. True story.
That's unbelievable.
Tommy, I was the first all-city class after that.
Okay.
So when the county and the city went their own ways on academies, I was 87-1, the very first all-city class.
But when you think about it from our side of it and watching Pat Drennan, who Brian mentioned, and Brian, that's one hell of a decision that was made at a wedding. All boozed up. But sometimes that's when your best decisions are made.
And that's good for us. That was good for
us. I mean, I think Pat just retired, right?
Yeah, 2 years, a year and a half.
And just two great investigators. I mean, the city, that was a good move for Sheetzer on that one.
Yeah, it's so funny you mentioned you had to have some juice to get on for those listeners in Singapore. You had to have some political clout to get on back in the day because there was a waiting list to get on law enforcement, especially in the city of St. Louis, forever, and you had to know somebody. Producer John and I got on, quite honestly, because his dad was a police commissioner.
JJ almost gave up.
I did. Well, times have changed now. I mean, these kids don't understand how hard it was to get on the police department.
Yeah, and there had just been a hiring freeze, and I got to believe that same chief probably got rid of the hiring freeze because he had a child that was just becoming old enough to become a policeman because...
Well, he didn't get a job.
Lucky for me.
Yeah, it's crazy. Now these kids get on with the pulse. If they can pass the test, they're on, brother.
Just think of the things we've seen change in law enforcement over that 37 years. Some for the good, some for the bad, some just mind-blowing.
Yep, yeah.
You know what I'm more impressed with? You had an unbelievable career in homicide and just story after story. But I'm more interested in your hockey stories. Sorry.
What do you want to hear?
Well, can we... Yeah. Going to? I want you to tell a story about your time after college. You were traveling Canada, and then you got a call from Herb Brooks's. Well, you're friends with Herb Brooks. You take it from there.
Okay. So long story short, I went to a small college in St. Paul, Minnesota. and a guy that was on our team who ended up being a runner-up for the Hobey Baker in 1980 was drawing a lot of attention. So, like, I would not come home in the summers, so I got invited to play in this Olympic Summer League. They call it the Twin City Olympic League, and this gentleman played. He ended up playing in the Montreal Canadiens system with a guy like Claude Lemieux.
What was his name?
His name was Mark Henches. Really good player. Schofield was on his team.
Dwight Schofield?
Yeah, in the American Hockey League. Anyway, so we all played through that, and then from there they invited some guys to the Midwest tryouts. They had one in the East, one in the Midwest, one in the West. So there was no chance in the world, but I thought it was cool that I got to go and participate in that. Even the guys that made it, some went to Colorado Springs, but most that went from that, all those three tryouts were gone back in a day. I mean, Herb Brooks already had who he wanted. He was just checking to make sure nobody slipped through the cracks. And my teammate didn't ultimately make it. So after that, after I get done playing, there's a coaching change at St. Thomas where I played, and I end up meeting the new coach in the gym without knowing it over the summertime because I had a class to, or two to finish after my after my 4 years. So I get hired as an assistant. He's best friend, not best friends, but he's really good friends with Herb Brooks. We started interaction. The University of Minnesota was only 2 miles away. We would go back and forth for scrimmages, and he would be in the stands with us, and we ended up talking, and I'd see him over the years, a couple of years I was up there coaching, and yeah, he was a good guy, very intense.
Herb Brooks.
It's wild.
So did you skate with a lot of the Olympic players?
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
Just for that, either that summer league or that tryouts.
But when you're watching them win the gold medal, you knew those dudes.
Yes.
That's cool.
That's really cool.
That is cool. Yeah.
You used that in your speech with your Vianney hockey team.
I did. I did. It was just something that, you know, that we all saw the movie. Obviously, none of us were in that locker room, but those kids need to know anything could be done because at the time, the Russians were so much better than everybody else.
Yes.
But it's one game, you know, 1 hour.
And anything can happen.
Yep. A bunch of college and it kids, did. Too.
Hold on.
Uh-oh, what do you got, Tommy?
Hold on. Let me play. Let me try to play something here. Let's see if this works.
All right, while you're trying to do that, because you got fat fingers.
This is one of these life experiences that's going to be with you for the rest of your life. It was built by everyone in this room, not by a handful, not by one. Cameron had a part in it for 3 years. He's back to share it with you. It's going to be shared by all of you. And most importantly, it's going to be celebrated by everyone in here.
Let's go, boys. Really,
you got that? You got to be able to celebrate, right? You didn't come all this way to go home with a broken heart. You got to celebrate it. And don't listen to all that CBC hype. How many times they won it? When was the last time we won? You guys realize from 1960 until 1980, the Team USA never beat the Russians once. And were outscored by hundreds of goals.
Jeez.
But what did it take? One night, everybody together, everybody went after it, and everybody left happy. That's the same thing I want for you guys. Let's get in here and say a good Vianney prayer. And we'll
go. There you go.
That's pretty cool.
Love it.
That's pretty cool.
And yeah, and just a little bit behind that is that CBC was probably undefeated that year, maybe.
Oh, game. For years, yeah.
And Vianney was not undefeated. And
no.
Maybe lost. I mean, what was your guys' record going into that game?
Just a little over 500.
Oh, my. I didn't know that.
And CBC was so like, that's like the Russians.
Yeah, they were like they Tom Malchek and the Russians. Yeah.
Nope. They had like a 15-year run or something.
Right. And CBC was all, I mean, if the people that are not from this area, CBC's high school, Catholic Boys High School, that is extremely good in sports and in many sports. And that particular year, and like Brian said, they had won state like 3 or 4 years in a row. They were undefeated or maybe lost a game, maybe. And so they were just supposed to show up and win that game.
I know that you have a cold case I don't know if you want to talk about it, but it's kind of consumed you for less for how long?
Probably the last 10 years.
You want?
It's a little girl, and it was started with Joe Burgoon. I know you guys have had him on a couple times, and Joe carried it all the way up to even after his retirement when he's working out in the county. It eventually got thrown in my hands. Very sad story. A very, very difficult case because we have an unidentified child with no head and nobody missing a child. So at the end of the day, you know, I read through all the old stuff, but there was nothing that they didn't do. There was nothing to second guess there. But technology has advanced with investigative genetic genealogy. So that is the path we're on now. We have made some headway. I don't think it's if, it's when.
Really?
This child's going to be identified, hopefully in the near future. But it's ongoing. You know, I don't want to, there is really no names to give because we don't know.
Now, will you continue looking into this in your retirement? Or?
I don't know that I'll be looking into it, but.
Someone else is picking up the ball.
Is picking up the ball.
There's some science being processed right now relative to that case, right?
Correct.
And we're just hoping for a good outcome soon. Yep.
And where was she found?
She was found in 5635 Clemens. It was an abandoned apartment building in the basement. She was just discarded there.
Man.
Now, do you think when she gets identified, as you said, not an if, but a when, will that possibly lead to an arrest?
It'll certainly jumpstart the list of suspects.
Okay.
Because there'll be a lot of people question why nobody reported this child missing.
Okay.
And I think what has happened is the main players, the parents, if they're even alive, didn't share this with a lot of people. But I can guarantee you from inquiries that we had, there's descendants, like cousins, maybe even siblings that are wondering what happened.
Wow.
And if the child wasn't from here, somebody still sat next to him in school.
Oh, God, yeah. I mean,
somebody, they visited here.
Approximate age of of her?
8 to 13.
Oh, geez, a five-year range.
Yeah.
So what year was she found?
She was found in 1983, February the 28th.
So I'm assuming that it's most likely that these people are from out of town?
Could be. Okay. But there's a connection here because you're not going to a vacant building.
Yeah, exactly.
In the 5600 block of Clemens at that time, carrying a dead body, no matter how you transported it. And can you imagine getting caught with a young girl without a head?
Now, that actually answers my question. So it wasn't committed down there. The body was brought there.
It was brought there, yes.
Okay. Wow.
Wow, that's going to be interesting. That'll hit the news.
Well, when that baby gets identified, yeah.
That's just such a broad 5 years. So was she decomposed? Is that why we have such a broad 5 year?
No, it's because there's, you know, back then, the way we identified people was mainly through dental records. So there's, you know, other than a sweater and some fingernail polish and a rope that she was tied up with, there's nothing really to identify her by, and with no missings, like Joe Burgoon and company, who I can't talk enough about because he's one of my mentors in this homicide business and still is, they checked out every missing in the country. They went through every school district. There's boxes of letters that they sent to every school district, and nobody had reported a kid missing.
That's incredible.
That is unreal. Was she sexually abused or...
I don't want to talk about that.
Okay.
Yep. You got it. So that's one of those cases you're going to take with you in mentally in retirement.
You can't forget something. Even though I wasn't there, just being involved and seeing the photographs and just talking to people over the years.
Well, it's probably one of those things where I'm sure that the hands that you're leaving it in is good hands, and I'm sure you'll be in communication with them from down in Florida, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm on the Gulf Coast.
Where exactly are you moving into Florida?
You'd rather not say.
Yeah, don't tell.
Tampa area. Tampa.
Okay.
There you go, Tampa,
Tampa
area.
Clearwater.
We have quite a few of our retired police officers from Florida have communicated with the show, and so that's how you can stay in touch with us. Just listen to our bullshit
from
Tampa.
Down in Florida. There's a bunch of people down there, yep. Listeners.
Hey, my nephew's going to Tampa University next year.
That'll be fun.
A little soccer player, and we're going to visit him. So I'm
You're going to look me up.
I'm going to have to.
Oh, producer John's looking up. What do we have?
What do we got, Johnny?
We need an update.
Yeah, we're creeping into like the 35.
Oh, wow.
40, no, I'd say 40 by now. It's kind of.
John, what's your estimate of time to be full eclipse?
For totality?
Well, I'd give it another 20-something minutes.
Okay.
All right. Well, we'll still be going.
On the clock.
You know that there's NASA breaks it down at the math of there's 2,380 solar eclipses of every kind every 1,000 years, which shakes out to 2 or 3 solar eclipses each year.
Really? Just in different places in the world?
Yeah. Yes. I just got the inspiration for that by looking at the sun for the last 30 minutes.
You look inspired. That's something else.
A little celestial information.
You know what we're going to do? When it gets to be about 75%, we're going to start JJ Zen.
Yeah, I think JJ Zen has...
During the eclipse of 2024.
I thought you forgot about me.
No.
Oh, okay. we're just throwing it in there, baby.
Gotcha. That's right.
But Brian, the other thing that we had talked about quickly is one of the cases you might remember is when... And you brought up the case where there was a murder down in the Arch grounds. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Yeah, that would have been in August of 1993. I had been detailed to homicide when, remember when Lieutenant Steve Martin got shot?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yep. Yep.
And that was like my assigned neighborhood. That was the JVL. I think they called it the Hole. The old timers called it the Hole.
Yep.
And I got involved in that case because I ended up knowing one of the shooters that was in the shootout. Interviewed him. So the great Lieutenant Henderson from Homicide let me hang around for a while. Then this Arch Ground thing comes up. And they do a priority squad, one of Colonel Hackett's priority squad, because it was Arch Grounds downtown. Mm-hmm. So I got involved with that because I was 4th Bureau again. I came from the 4th Bureau. So I was real familiar with the downtown robberies. And it was kind of an interesting case because a couple, I wouldn't call them elderly, but they were certainly senior, went to the Arch Ground. Landing back then was
hopping.
Oh, God, yeah.
And you remember we had landing beat officers, downtown beat officers.
Yep.
So when the shooting happens at 1 a.m. in the parking garage on the Arch Grounds, it's a robbery. And they were pissed because they only got a limited amount of money, and they shoot this woman. They don't shoot the man. He bails out, gets in his own car, drives down, reports it. They immediately start a massive canvas all through the Arch Grounds, the landing. And I don't remember the officers, but somebody finds a trash can up on 4th Street by the Mansion House, and there's a bunch of discarded items, include the murder weapon, discarded there. We did a lot of legwork. There was an old rag that was really unique looking. We figured out that was made from a St. Louis wiping materials up on Parnell. And we're checking robbers in the downtown area, and the Morris Stroud was using a phone card from the victims, and we find out he worked right across the street from this wiping, where they make these rags, at a muffler shop. So we talked to them guys up there because we knew the murder weapon had a clamp holding the barrel on the gun. It was a piece of shit gun. And they remembered him getting a hose clamp and putting it on the end of a barrel. We end up with 4 guys, and it was kind of a weird set of circumstances for the suspects because the one guy was... Reginald Carr was like 39 years old and had been in the penitentiary almost his whole adult life. Then he had like a 32-year-old friend, 28, 27, maybe 29, the younger crowd. But he was hardcore penitentiary guy that just they targeted a certain population. It was a horrible, horrible case.
They were from Florida, weren't they?
No, they were from St. Louis.
Oh, they were?
Yeah.
Because that article...
The victim,
yeah.
Yeah, one of them. It was a retired policeman. The male that lived to survive was a retired policeman.
Oh, really?
And he had relocated to Florida.
Oh, wow.
And then he came back here to visit?
Yeah, he was in town visiting.
We'll leave that alone.
We had to prosecute it federally.
Yeah.
And we had the park rangers, which they flew in a bunch of people to help out. And obviously friends from the FBI were trying to get in there. But the park rangers did a whole lot as far as the feds did.
But they, you know, in like the forensics of the towel or whatever it was. And then he used the payphone right across the street to do the calling card, right?
Yes. Right across from the muffler shop.
And then that's amazing. But because that was back in the day, so the forensics weren't a huge thing going on back in the day.
Right. We did, you know, surveillance cameras, there weren't much.
Right.
I remember I got called down to Chief of Detectives Hackett's office, and he was asking what was going on, and he swivels around in his chair and dials a number real quick, and I hear the guy say, Quantico and so-and-so, and he goes, hey, Joe. What's going on? It's Jimmy Hackett from St. Louis. And they were talking about the case, and he says, credit cards. That's what you need to check. So Hackett looks at me and goes, credit cards. So that's how we start going back over all the robberies, and we're able to put it all together through credit card. Remember, we used to have training for the credit card numbers and all that? Yeah. Then this phone card number. Yeah, but it was no DNA or none of that stuff was even going on. It was interviews and credit cards.
Now there's four of them doing it?
Four of them? Yeah, there was two approach the car and then two kind of lookouts because that garage was pretty big. I think it was four levels or so.
I guess their intention was to kill him too?
I don't know. I think it was just out of spite, ignorance, meanness. They just shot into the car and she got hit.
So when they went to trial, all four went to trial?
Yeah, all convicted.
Really?
Good.
Any death sentence?
No.
Sound disappointed.
Yeah.
Just care. I mean, the guy killed an innocent person blood.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Over nothing. I think it was $40 or something.
Unreal.
Yeah, that's not right.
Which was a lot of money back then.
So there's no chance of any of them getting out?
I don't believe so. But you never know.
Today. Time changed, right?
Yeah.
So, Sergeant McGlynn, one of the questions I always ask when we have coppers on, and this should be a good question for you. I mean, you're 72 hours from the end of a great 39-year law enforcement career, 37 with the city. But can you think of any opportunity or anything that you were able to do only because you were in law enforcement, because you were a police officer?
A couple things popped to mind, like dignitary details to include the president, vice president when I was in intelligence. I had a sentence there for 54 months. I had to do that.
A sentence, yeah.
And then the Cardinals were really good in a couple World Series playoffs, and then the All-Star game was in St. Louis also during that. So that was all stuff I would have never been that close to or had access to.
Okay, we're back. We're back in the great eclipse of 2024 live from the St. Louis Hills, and our guest now is a fan favorite in St. Louis, ex-Cardinal Eli Marrero, on with The Brighter Side of Blue. Eli, thank you for coming. How you doing? Where are you calling in from?
From Miami.
Miami, down in Florida. So there's no eclipse down there. Yeah, you're not in any path of the eclipse. You're way down there.
Before we started this, I actually went outside with the wife and we looked at it and we could kind of see a little bit.
Oh, you couldn't really?
I think she was telling me that in 20 years, it'll be over Miami pretty good.
Oh, wow. Good.
All right.
Your wife's on top of it.
Yes.
Man.
We'll do a show from there. So that'll be our show in
20 years from now.
Yeah, we'll do it down there.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I won't be on the damn
show. I mean, you look good. You could be doing it.
I don't want to do this for 20 more years.
You don't?
No, this is like, we're getting down to the end. This is our 22nd show, and we're top 1%. Top 1% of all podcasts.
Yeah.
And you're our first athlete.
That is amazing. Hey, real quick, could you guys tell me a little bit about Back in the Blue? Brighter Blue?
Yes. Let JJ do it.
Tommy's idea.
But JJ's voice left us. He's the talent now.
He's the one with the voice?
Yeah, he's the talent.
I just came back. You know, it was gone.
1-900-JJ.
What we're doing, Eli, is we're just having a podcast that kind of spotlights some investigations over the years that police officers have done, some really good investigations. We want to spotlight their character and how they are, like, human beings rather than police officers sometimes, you know. Everybody sees the police officers as police officers rather than human beings. And I think that our show is, you know, we kind of let loose. We have fun. And we really want to humanize police officers. And that kind of leads me into my first question to you.
Well, hold on a second. That's not an interruption, because I was going to. I'm going to step on that a minute with Eli, because this, my analogy that JJ liked, is fitting of Eli. So, hey, for the last 10 to 15 years, law enforcement has been taking a hit, you know, and there's a bunch of haters out there that highlight when one officer does one thing bad in the world, the media really jumps all over it and makes sure that everybody knows about that. What we're here to say is that 99.9% of all police officers are great heroes and do great things every day. And so we're starting we're calling it the blue wave. And just like when you were a Cardinal, you know, a certain section at the stadium would try to start the wave, and there'd be five people standing up and doing this, and nobody would follow, and pretty soon there's more and more. And then pretty soon the wave's going all around Busch Stadium. You remember those days? Well, that's what we're starting with, the brighter side of blue, the law enforcement wave, all the way across the country.
Okay. Real quick, is there any way we can get him on the camera? Because I can't see him.
Uh-oh.
Who's that?
Me.
Oh, Danny.
He's not on that.
What?
He can't see Danny.
He can't see me on the thing.
Oh.
No.
That's probably a good thing, though.
Can you see the other guy?
You don't really want to see him.
There you go.
I don't know.
It's a little dark right now because we're in the eclipse.
Okay, right there. Cool. Awesome.
All right, there. Go ahead. So anyway, that's what we're doing. We're starting a blue wave, and we're going to get the word out because, like I said, law enforcement is good, and they're heroes, and they deserve to be talked about. So that's what we're doing.
Well, I want to
100%. Yeah, 100%. Look what I got here.
I like it.
Back to blue, baby. I love that.
Come on now,
Eli.
That is cool.
You
come on, man.
Yeah. You started,
what year were you with the Cardinals? What year did you start with the Cardinals?
I signed with them out of high school in '93, and my last year with them was 2003.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, well, I remember.
But I came up to the big leagues with them in '97.
Well, you actually did some ride-alongs with me a few times, and we had a good time, and you were it was fun. But you actually did a ride-along with someone else. I think Jim Sanders first and the second. You're kind of bored with it. I'm just joking about that. But you rode with him. And Freddie Stiff, who used to be – he's still with the Cardinals. Remember Freddie Stiff? He was a policeman that worked for the Cardinals. He's retired. He's still there. We're not sure what Freddie does, but he's still there every game. But he's a good dude, and he actually is one that told me that you want to do a ride along. And what made you want to do a ride along in the police department with the police?
Well, you know, I know I showed you guys this, obviously.
Right.
Well, I mean,
right.
I didn't get this. I didn't get this for the show.
I got
it because my daughter's actually in the police academy right now.
Oh, yeah. Heck,
holy cow!
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's Pack 146.
Wow, I love it. Where is she at now? Put her on right now. Huh? Go grab her and take your place right now.
And we just did a traditional run with them at 7 o'clock in the morning. We ran with Pack 146 through downtown Miami. You know, they were shouting Cadence.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
She's actually the second female squad leader in her class.
Wow, that's unbelievable. That is unbelievable.
Yes. So she's, you know, she's raised your right. Young men, grown men. So she's done a heck of a job. You know, so. You know, I think it goes back a long time, ever since I was a young kid. We've always been, I always admire the military, first responders. You know, I mean, everything has to do with law enforcement and first responders, I've always been a fan of. So as I got older, you know, and I had the opportunity to have a ride-along, and my first ride-along was in St. Louis.
Yep.
And
you still do?
It was an amazing experience. And I actually did. I actually did the ride along. I did from 7 o'clock at night to 7 o'clock in the morning.
Oh wow!
With Jim, like we did
with
the
Sanders,
whole
Jim
day.
Sanders, yeah.
It wasn't like an hour or two from home. I did the whole night.
Yeah, we always liked him because we always liked when
it
you rode along.
Experience. Jim, you know, Jim taught me a lot. He taught me how to hang out under a tree, sleep for a couple hours in a parking lot, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, Jim, what's going on, man? You're in reaction. Don't worry about it, man. You know, it's so he taught me a lot.
I hope you're talking about great, Sanders, you know? And not me. Yeah. No. But I remember the one ride along. Well, one time you called us. You were doing ride-alongs, and you called me. The Cardinals were playing a day game in Cincinnati. I didn't know it, but, you know, in St. Louis, we always listen to the games on the radio and stuff when they're out, or watch them on TV. But I wasn't paying attention that day, but I knew you guys were in Cincinnati, and you called me during the game. And I was like, what are you doing calling me the game? You go, I'm in a dugout right now. It's a rain delay. I said, oh. So you called me from Cincinnati dugout during a rain delay and told me you wanted to come back. When you came back on Monday, you wanted to do a ride-along. You already have done a couple already. So I said, yeah, whatever you want, brother. You can do a ride-along if you want.
But I can't remember which one was the first ride-along did. Was it with Sanders?
It was with Sanders. You did a couple, I believe.
Sanders was the one that went from 7 to 7.
Yes.
Yeah, JJ, yes, JJ's right. Never worked that long in his life.
No, I was mobile reserve, brother. We did. And I'm starting to get my feelings hurt because you forgot, but that's
all. No, we did. I remember that. We did. It was you and I and two other ones in the car.
Yes, well, Steve Dodge is my partner at the time. And he's actually the chief of police of Sunset Hills Police Department. It's a little Muni Police Department. He left a few years ago. He retired as a lieutenant, and he took over Sunset Hills. And he's been on the show. And we'll tell you after we get off the show how to get on our podcast. And you can go watch Steve's his episode. You'll like it. It's a good episode.
Your daughter will love our show, too.
We did a couple of narcotic stops, too.
Yes, we basically and I'll tell one of my favorite stories, besides us pulling over Izzy, was I just picked you up from the stadium, and we were driving down, I think, Park, and you saw Jason Isringhausen, Cardinal Hall of Famer now. You saw him. We didn't see him. And you said, hey, that's Izzy. And I said, you want us to pull him over? And you go, yeah. So I busted a U-turn. We pull up to a four-way stop, and he starts to try to tell me to move, like, go. And I put my arm out the window, and I wave real hard, like, no, you go. So he pulls in the parking lot, and I light him up. And you remember, you get out with a flashlight in your hand, and you approach Izzy. And you remember how it went? You remember what he said to you?
What did he say? I can't remember exactly what he said. You
walk up, and I got out behind you, and you said, let me see your hands. And you got that Cuban accent, and he says, Eli? And you're like, how'd you know it was me? He goes, how do you know it was me? And he goes, your stupid accent. And and then you got him out, and he goes, you scared the shit out of me. And I love him. Finally goes, what the hell are you doing? And he didn't know no one knew you were doing these ride-alongs. And I remember you said, don't tell LaRussa. Don't tell him I'm doing these.
I specifically, when we come out of the stadium and all the people are there asking for autographs.
I remember that.
That's when we exit the stadium. I exited the stadium and jumped right into the squad car.
Yes. I remember you kissing your wife and kids goodbye and got in the police car. That's the same night.
Yeah, man. It was a great experience.
Yeah, that's when we pulled Izzy over. Yep.
You guys made a drug arrest?
We made a couple of them. And that's yeah.
You know what? Hey, let me tell you something. Cops know what they're doing, man. I mean, we pulled up to a stop at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I don't know if it was Jim, but one of us in the car that said,
that was me.
You know what? Let's get behind that car right there. And all they did was just pull up in front of them like that. They made a stop, pull up in front of it, and one of you guys said, let's pull up behind that car. And as soon as you pull up behind that car, they took off. Yeah. But I remember it was a quick chase. It was a quick chase. It wasn't very long because you said we couldn't continue to chase him.
Oh, thank you.
Eli has your back there. Yeah,
thanks
Eli,
for my back, bro.
Eli has your back.
But I remember there was one of the stops. We made a few good arrests with you in the car. One was at El Camino, and I think this might be what you're talking
about. Blue El Camino. He took the pen in his mouth.
Yeah. So I remember we.
Well, let me tell you a story. These guys are great. Let me tell you something. These guys
I'm not sure we might have to edit this out though. But go on.
Yeah, he's still on the job.
Yeah, I'm still working. No, go ahead. I'm good.
Okay, never mind. But you know what? It was, to tell the truth, I was really joking. When we pulled the guy out, Camino, that he stuck the pen inside the guy's mouth trying to get the drug for him to swallow it out. And that guy had a lot of cash like that.
And
I'm like, Jim, let's go. Let's cut a little something for us. Man. A little something
for us. That's
and Jim's like, man, you know, we can't do that. You know, internal affairs.
Oh, yeah. Well,
the funny part about that arrest, it was, I don't know, Newberry Terrace and Walton. You probably don't remember the streets. But we had a call for a tow truck, and we're running his name. And Steve and I got stuff to do, and you're supposed to be standing there with us. All of a sudden, I look up, and you're gone. I'm like, I look at Steve Dodge, and I said, "Where'd Eli go?" And we looked out, and you're walking down the street with a flashlight in your hand, and you're slapping your hand with the end of the flashlight, and we gave you a police raid jacket. Yeah, a raid jacket on. And I like yelled at. I go, "Eli, get back here, man!" I yelled at him.
And
the funny part, we finally get him back, and the tow truck shows up. And if you remember this, I still think this is funny. The tow truck guy comes up and he keeps looking at you like he recognizes you, but he doesn't know. I said, "You recognize him? St. Louis Cardinal baseball." He goes, "Man, you quit baseball and become a cop?" I go, "No, you idiot, he's doing a ride along." Yeah. That was one of my favorite stories.
I was in it. When we did it, good. I was in it all the way.
Oh, you were.
That is funny.
Yeah, it wasn't no quick one. We were in it all the
way. You did the whole shift. And what I really liked is you always bought our lunch, too.
That was mandatory.
I heard this is a rumor. I don't know if this is true. This didn't come from Jimmy. It came from one of the other ride-along guys. Is that Albert Pujols expressed interest in also doing a ride-along. And it was quickly denied by all the officers. And I thought that might make you feel bad, is that they thought you were expendable, but Albert wasn't.
You know what? It's funny, but I do remember talking to him about it.
I can tell you that, too. When I worked the Cardinal games, I had the dugout a couple games. But I was standing, before the game starts, you have to stand on the field and face the crowd. Well, I'm standing on the top of the steps, and I hear someone say, "Jimmy." And I kind of look around, I look down, and you're sitting next to Albert Pujols. I look at Albert Pujols, and he says my name again. I actually put my finger on my chest, like, "You talking to me?" He's like, "Yeah," and you were laughing. You were dying laughing. So I walk down the steps, and I go, "What's going on?" He goes, "Hey, Eli says he has a lot of fun doing ride-alongs. I want to do a ride-along with you." I said, "There's no way." "There's not a chance, brother." I said, maybe after the season. I said, "Eli's got a bad ankle. He can do a ride-along sound too, so I don't care." But there's no way Pujols is getting in my car when he was the man. He always has been.
Oh, yeah. He was carrying the
El Hombre.
Team.
Huh?
El Hombre.
El Hombre, yeah.
El Hombre.
Yeah,
yes.
But you actually said you thought he might be too scared to do it anyway.
They showed interest, but they weren't really to commit. You know, you had to commit. Even though I never got a vest either, man. I was naked out there.
Yeah, you were. Now, we didn't think about that. I feel bad about that now. I tell you what, where the times are right now, I'd put a vest on around you right now. Those are different times.
I believe it, man.
Eli, one quick or a quick question here. You know, you were up and coming with the Cardinals, and your career was on the rise, and you got the unfortunate news that you got cancer during at the beginning of a season. And we always talk about here on the Brighter Side of Blue is that being part of the police family is that they help you through things like that. And you were part of a team your whole life, you know, and then you were just on the Cardinals. How much did your teammates help you through that period of your life?
Oh, I mean, when you're part of a team, you're surrounded. I mean, when you're part of a team, you don't obviously get along with everybody. You know what I'm saying? You respect each other, but you don't get up. But there's the majority of the group that you do get along with. They always got your support. They always got your back. They might not all call you, but you just maybe get that one call from one of the guys from the group. Hey, you know what I'm saying? We're thinking about you. We got your back. You're going to come back strong. And then the difference is when you get there, and then when you get there, you're embraced by your fellow teammates, you know, whether it be in law enforcement or baseball. 100%. That's just, you know, it just kind of gives you a jolt, You know, a rush of adrenaline that, you know, I'm like, wow, these people got my back no matter what, no matter what I'm going through. You know what I'm saying? They still got a job to do, you know, but it's I mean, to have something like that, you know, makes the hair in the back of your neck stand up, you know what I'm saying? To knowing that the support is always there, not from only from your family, but from, you know, from people that, you know, that, you know, your colleagues.
Your daughter is going to experience that now in the police family. Once she's in, she's in.
So
100%.
What
and you know what? And they make that happen because it goes back to what you guys were talking about earlier. You know, about the 99% of them just being regular human beings. They're regular people like you and I. You know, they just got a tough job to do. You know, but people, I don't think people understand how hard a job is of a police officer, a first responder, the military. You know, those guys. You know, they go out there. Is you know, they're dealing with a lot of stuff that. You know, she's seen some things already that I haven't seen. You know, it makes you kind of whoa.
Yeah.
You know, so mentally, you got to be strong. And they're always talking about the support group. As far as, you know, what I'm saying, if you see some stuff, come talk to us.
Right.
We got your back. We got you covered.
Yep.
But when it comes to the mental part of it, because a lot, you know, there's a lot of police officers, you know, they commit suicides. Right. You know,
We just
they're real. When it comes to that support system for them, you know, when it comes to the mental part, the emotional part, be able to at least talk to somebody about it. No, hey, you're not alone in this.
Yes, 100%.
So when did she graduate?
She graduated at the end of April now.
Oh, wow, it's coming up.
I've never talked to her about joining the police academy ever.
Really?
Ever. I'm telling you got to be a cop. No, she just one day said, you know what, I want to be a detective.
But did she see your support over the years? Do you think that that your attitude over the years towards law enforcement and towards military kind of led her in that direction?
Everything here in the house is to support military. Whenever I'm on Facebook or I'm looking at something on Facebook, I go, look at this. You know what I'm saying? I post something on Facebook. All my friends on Facebook, they repost it.
Right.
You know, they're on TV. You know what I'm saying? Something with the police officer. Hey, look at this with the police officer, what they're doing to the police officer. That's bull, man. That shouldn't be like that. You know what I'm saying? You got to support them. You know, so we've always, not to her specifically, but we just say it in general.
Correct.
You know, like when somebody's there, she might be on the couch. I might be watching TV. She'll hear me say it like, hey, you know, what are you doing here? Man? You got to be kidding me. You know what I'm saying?
We need to get a graduation picture, JJ. You need to send JJ a graduation picture from the academy.
So we can put her online.
We can put her on the show and announce her as part of the family now, law enforcement.
Oh, 100%. Pack 146.
Hey, I got some advice. Do not do a ride-along with her, though.
No,
I wouldn't do it. You'll make you a nervous wreck. You didn't care about
Steve and I. You want to be funny? She's done two ride-alongs. The first ride-along, she did in a pretty bad neighborhood.
Yeah,
you know who's behind the ride along?
You,
Jerry Layshark.
Yeah, what? Yeah.
I tracked her on her phone, and me and the wife jumped in the car, and we were like, God.
Okay.
That is a great story.
She was parked with obviously the training officer that's training her. They were parked, and we were right behind.
See what's going on, huh?
Was she mad?
Nah, she was more embarrassed. I hate you, but. She wasn't mad, but I don't think I'm going to be doing that too much.
No, I wouldn't do that anymore.
Right, you might not make a habit of that, but I could see where you're interested that first particular night because it was only one night as a ride-along as part of the academy, I guess, right?
Yes, mandatory. Yeah. So they kind of throw. But you know what? Back to what I was saying earlier as far as that, when we went on the run, in the academy, it's pretty cool because I've been on a couple. Whenever they have volunteer events, we're there. You know, like the other day, they needed a volunteer event for a DUI. So me, the wife, and a couple of our friends, we went, and we had to get drunk. Seriously, no joke. They had to do that because they needed volunteers. So then
what a humanitarian you are.
Huh?
What a humanitarian you are to sacrifice and have to get drunk for your daughters.
You know what? Someone's got to take one for the team. But, you know what I'm saying? So, right. We have 45 minutes to get drunk. So, I was hammered, dude. I went downstairs to try to pass a DUI thing. I failed the very first time. One foot in front of the other.
Lightweight.
I was done.
Wow.
That's funny.
That is so cool.
And like I was saying, I mean, that's just one of the events. The other events that we did was the run. But even before the run or after the run, you sit and you talk to the lieutenant, you talk to the sergeant, you talk to the DIs, And you talk to them, they're regular people. They're cracking jokes. You know what I'm saying? They're telling you stories. It has nothing to do with police officers. You know what I'm saying? And right. You see them just regular people talking normal. You know what I'm saying? It's like people see them, they think it's this big bad wolf. You know what I'm saying? No, man, these are regular people.
Right.
You know, and they were just talking to us normal. It has nothing to do about police. I was just talking about regular things in life. You know what I'm saying? And when you get a chance to sit down and talk to a police officer, you know what I'm saying? Take that opportunity. You know what I'm saying? Because you're quick to, you know what I'm saying? Even if you might not be a supporter, you'll quickly be like, wait a minute, this guy is not as bad as, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Yep. Representing the uniform, you know?
So, I love it.
Absolutely.
I love your support.
What are you doing nowadays, Eli?
Right now we're doing, I'm staying busy doing commercial real estate building. So we're just finding empty lots and throwing up big buildings and building them and, you know, selling them.
There you go.
All down in Florida?
Yes, everything done down here in South Florida. It's hot, baby. It's hot in Miami. Miami's hot.
Yeah,
it is. Yep.
Miami's hot. Miami's the number one place to come to for development right here.
I got another good story for you, Eli, with Jimmy, is that, you know, obviously, as everybody, well, a lot of the Cardinal fans would know that you were traded in the trade for Adam Wainwright, who obviously made quite his name here in St. Louis. But any time that Adam's name would get brought up around Jimmy, he would always kind of make sure that the point got across that he lost his buddy and that he'd rather have his buddy here.
It was the worst trade they ever made, Eli. I mean, geez.
Well, I think they snuck me in there with JD Drew, though. They kind of slipped me in there.
We'll take you take credit for the trade, though. you were the bigger piece of that trade.
Now you got into coaching a little bit. Tell us a little bit about it. That after you, when did you finally retire from baseball, and then what did you do after that with coaching?
2008, I think it was my last year. Yeah, 2008, and then I went to coach with the Reds, and I went over there because Walt Jockey was over there.
Oh, yeah, okay. So gotcha. Right.
I reached out to him. He said, "Oh, Eli, why don't you come over here?" And I loved it. I did it for 7 years. I managed, which is what I wanted to do because I did the hitting coach, but as a hitting coach, I didn't feel like I had a lot of control. You know what I'm saying? And I saw a lot of players with a lot of mistakes and learning how to be professionals. So I said, you know what? And I told him right as soon as I got there, I told him what I wanted to do. You know, if you want to get ahead, you got to let people know what you want to do. You just can't stay quiet. I told him, I want to manage. I want to get to the point that I want to manage. So eventually, after like a year or two, boom, they put me in there to manage. I started at the lower levels, went up to high A ball, and it was perfect because I wanted to, you know, take the team that they gave me and kind of grab them and grasp around them and teach them.
That's
how to be
awesome.
A professional, how to respect the game, how to prepare yourself to play. So I wanted to mold them, not quite like me, but how to do things the
right
way.
How to be professional.
Yeah.
Like, one of the things I always tell them, listen, no matter what happens here, this always stays here. Like, if you guys screw up, you don't hurt nobody else, so it stays here. I don't say nothing to your organization. I never reported anything that's not too serious to the organization because I didn't want to be that person, you know? You know?
Right.
Like, I wanted to make sure that they always felt that my door was always open and I had their back no matter what.
That's the kind of supervisors we like to work for, too, in the police department.
Yeah, same thing.
Eli. We don't like snitches.
No.
No. I told them that from day one. You know what I'm saying? Now, if you get into a bar fight and you get hurt, I can't cover that up.
No, right. Exactly.
Right. And I told them I can't cover that up. You know what I'm saying? But an altercation here, whatever, nobody gets hurt, you know what I'm saying? I don't need to bother nobody with that.
As long as you can play the next day. Right.
It stays here. That's it.
Producer John.
And believe it or not, I got a letter in the mail one day from one of the players. He probably not playing no more, but he was like, Eli was the best manager I've ever played for in my life.
That's all you need to hear.
Why? Because he gave me an opportunity that nobody else will. That's the difference.
Any desire to go back?
I'm sorry?
Any desire to go back to coaching or getting back in baseball?
No,
you're done.
Not right now. I mean, now the game's very analytical, you know, by numbers, you know what I'm saying? It's, you know, especially kids right now, they feel real entitled.
God. That's brutal.
It's so unreal.
They act like they've been there, done that.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And there's no way. That'll clash with me.
It should.
Believe it or not, it's not that I can't make an adjustment. I just don't want to put myself in that position because I've done it. You know what I'm saying? I grew up playing kind of the old school baseball with the right. old school players, and started to transition as I was kind of heading out. Baseball was transitioning more. Now, remember before when I came up, you had to play at least 4 years in the big league before you even consider talking.
Yes.
Right.
Before you can even talk or say something, you got to be at least 4 years in. And you know, and then the veteran guys will be like, okay, you know, we can, now you're kind of established. Now, after 1 year, guys are like acting like they've been there for 20 years.
Oh, that says it all.
That's sort of like,
you is, know,
it's in the job too.
Yeah.
So the game is going in that direction, and it seems like everybody in the organization is kind of going with it, along with it, because they don't want to rock the boat. They just kind of stay in there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's fine. That's their thing. That's not my thing. So,
actually, what you described there with your leadership qualities, and then what we were just talking about there, there's a lot of similarities within police department and what you're talking about too, because it's the same.
It's the same thing.
Is that 100%. A lot of these younger police officers think that they need to be a detective in 2 years, where you know that's usually not the best decision. Now, many of the people that we have on this show have done that because they know people.
And, not me,
but. Again, what you were saying is that there's a lot of similarities between the career of an athlete and the police department with the teams and the leadership styles,
yeah,
and stuff like that, and yeah, that was cool.
Eli, you can't see him on the screen, but our producer John has a few words.
Well, it kind of goes into what we're just talking about, you know. Right before the season started, the Cardinals brought back Matt Carpenter and they brought in Brandon Crawford. And, you know, a lot of people in St. Louis kind of question that. But how important is it, Eli, to the younger players on the team to have those kind of guys who have been around? Because a lot of times I bet it's uncomfortable going up to a coach and you know, confiding in them. Is it easier to go up to a veteran player and ask them if they're, you know, how to handle yourself or – you know, ask them for advice?
You know, I don't mind a coach that maybe doesn't have a lot of experience, but kind of studied the game and has an idea what he's talking about. In that sense, yes, you know, you have coaches like that. They might not play very long, but at least they know stay in their box and they know how to approach a player when a player comes to them. Okay, but, you know, a veteran guy has been there, done that. You know, he can give you a more of an insight of you know, what it takes on a day in and day out basis as far as playing the game and making adjustments on the fly. You know, so I mean, I think for when it comes to that aspect, but if you notice, I think I even talked to some of the players down here, you know, and they say some of those old coaches that played, I think that's what they told me. I'm not quite 100% sure, but they say they kind of just kind of moving them on along and bringing the you know the analytic guys in.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Where they can, imagine that, where you can be in a cage and you're hitting numbers off in a cage, and they take those numbers off in the cage and they put them on a computer and they say, okay, this is where you need to be.
Yeah. Right.
In a cage. Like, I mean, so that's,
yeah.
It's
the money ball.
It's sad.
Yeah.
The analytics has taken over, and more analogies, because that's how all businesses are run now, is just through analytics and numbers and not a whole lot of common sense approach, or they limit the common sense approach, I should say.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Remember a patrol that we ended at 4 o'clock in the morning, and then we went down to the station. We started shooting the paintball gun around.
I don't know what you're talking about either. No. Yeah. You were always kind of
I'm kidding.
No, you were kind of a gun guy. You still have guns? You have guns, or are you not into them anymore? Or were you into them? Or should we just cut this whole
thing? Big time. You know, when I really got into it, my buddy took me to a place here in Hialeah that his buddy they had a small little ammunition factory that they made ammo, 9mm. I think they made it for police officers actually. They made 9mm 45s. And another, I can't remember what it was. And he had an indoor shooting range, and I shot my first MP5 there.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
That's what we said.
I was hooked. I was hooked. From that point on, I'm like, And I had no money though. I had no money. I was still in high school. I was like, oh my God, I am hooked. So as soon as I got some money, I bought myself an M60, an M16. What else did I get? American 180, an MP40.
A good safe too. Yeah.
Good gun safe.
Oh man, I had machine guns left and right.
That's awesome.
Alrighty. We'll cut that.
I probably had like 50,000 rounds in my bathroom.
In your bathroom?
Because when you're shooting machine guns, you go to a lot of ammo. So,
what's up, Scarface?
Yeah, because when we went to go shoot, you know what I'm saying? It's not just me. I like to invite a lot of people.
Say hello to my little friend.
All right. We got to get rolling, Eli.
Anything else you want to end on? Anything?
I'm sorry?
Anything you want to say before you go?
I appreciate this podcast. It was unbelievable. Get to see you guys again. Tom, thank you for everything. You know,
we wish your daughter good luck.
I'd like to give a shout out to Sanders, because Sanders was great to me out there.
He's still on night watch. He's a sergeant now.
Yeah, so I want to give him a shout out because he was awesome. On that note,
he tells a story that you brought him to the stadium and you hit fly balls to him and he couldn't catch one of them. Is that true?
Oh, real quick, you know what? I did bring him to the stadium. The team was on the road, and I hit ground balls to him, and he was catching. I'm like, wow, this guy's pretty good. Once I started hitting fly balls, he looked like a guy riding a mechanical bull.
That's a great way.
Yeah, no chance. No chance.
That's awesome.
But you know what? I'm glad you guys are all safe, man. Very positive thing, very positive podcast. Continue to support the men in blue and all our first responders. And you guys have a lifelong supporter down here. Whatever you guys need, man.
We appreciate you, Eli. Well, thank you so much.
You guys have a tough job to do that not everybody wants to do, you know. So
you need to come back and visit once in a while.
It takes a lot of commitment.
Thank you so much, Eli. We'll be back.
Thanks, Eli.
Thank you. Peace.
Thanks, brother. I'll be in touch.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right. Bye.
All right, Jimbo.
See you, buddy.
Well, it's awesome to have Eli, such a law enforcement fan.
And we did not know that that was almost like it was staged. We had no idea his daughter was in the police academy.
No, she's part of the family. That's unbelievable. That was good. That was enjoyable.
He's a fun guy. He's a good dude.
Yeah. Well, I know that people are going to be outraged that they had to wait this long for JJ's Zen. Johnny, what do you got for some music?
Deep breath, JJ.
When you realize nothing is lacking, the whole world belongs to you. Sorry, I kind of hiccuped on that one.
Yeah, so let's do that again.
When you realize nothing is lacking, the whole world belongs to you.
When you realize nothing is lacking, the whole world belongs to you.
If you think about it, it means you got everything you need. Your life is good. That's how I took out of it.
Who wrote that?
That is a real Zen. Lao Tzu.
Lao Tzu. That was in his
actually I've used him.
That
a
was
few
in
times.
His early years. Lao
was pretty smart.
He was a genius.
He was a very good student.
Very good student.
How about Simon Tzu?
Simon Tzu.
We got Lao Tzu. My story. My newspaper article is about a guy named Simon Tzu.
You got something out of newsroom.com for us today?
Lao Tzu and Simon Tzu. I like it.
I think it's a great segue.
Okay, do it.
Well, you know, we had the meth episode not too long ago.
The meth episode.
And there's been a lot of comments and a lot of interest in the meth industry. So I found this article. This happened in Australia. And the title is Australia's Dumbest Criminal, with quotations, was sprung with... And I guess over there, sprung means arrested. Sprung with $130 million in meth after crashing into parked police cars. So the kid's name is Simon Tzu. He's a courier for these meth dealers over in Australia. And he's in this little minivan, and he's driving middle of the day, you know, nothing. And there's video on this. I'll send you the video, Jack, but... he's just driving down the street past the police station, and he kind of nods off and takes out two police cars parked right in front.
With how much meth in his car?
Well, it's over 260 kilos of crystal meth.
He should have been taken, and he wouldn't have fell asleep.
So yeah, exactly. He could have drove all the way to St. Louis if he would have took some of it. So he kept going, of course, and there's a bunch of coppers out there, so they jump in their cars and they get him pulled over. And he says that he's delivering food. And apparently he actually did work for some restaurant in
was Australia. It their van, the food van?
He was door-dashing meth.
Yeah. So he anyway, they caught him. You know, he's acting all goofy, and they arrest him. And then he just, he ended up pleading guilty and got 6.5 years in the slammer for this in Australia. So it's like you think that when you're transporting 260 kilos worth of dope, you'd stay awake and you'd avoid all the police stations.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe.
But not Simon. Not so anyway.
Simon 2.
Not Simon.
Simon 2. Not also, but 2. T-U.
Simon, not Simon as well.
As well. So anyway, this is our news article of the week. And
I love it.
I like it.
With JJ Zen, if you're not lacking anything, the world is yours.
And Simon, too, if you're lacking common sense, don't don't be a courier.
The slammer is yours.
Do not be a drug courier.
I think the best way to end this episode would kick it to Brian McGlynn here and let him just sum up a police career and what it meant to you, and you know, 37 years, like we said, and in 48 hours you will no longer be, or 72 hours.
We've been there
it's
that
all
long.
Over with.
We've been there that long. Right. He's on the 48.
In 2 hours, you're no longer.
We're gonna have his retirement party here.
What I can say is that after doing it that long and being in the homicide business 21 plus years, it's kind of uncomfortable to talk about. It's uncomfortable memories, but what I've come to realize after all these years, it's part of my book, but really the people that are affected by it, the families, the loved ones, the relatives, those are the people that really have carried a heavy weight over the years. That's why it's kind of hard to talk about a lot of times. It becomes part of your own book, but when it comes down to it, after so long, and you'll know when it is, you got to leave a couple chapters for yourself. Write your own chapters.
That's right.
Outside of this business.
Very true.
That is well said.
That's great.
Great way to end.
Wasn't as good as his
Sarge. Sarge, thanks for coming. Thanks for your service.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure, and I really enjoyed the show. I had the opportunity to come to Barney's for obvious reasons. It was a good time. I missed one of your upcoming guests, but hopefully I can catch that. I hear he's coming on soon.
Yep.
Detective Heffley.
Yep. Johnny Heffley will be on this week.
Yeah. Yep. He's a good guy, and I love his stories.
So it's your last roll call. You're not going to get teary-eyed, are you?
I don't know.
Yeah, you don't know. I didn't have one.
Kind of tough.
But, well, good luck. Good luck in Florida. Thank you for your service.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it all.
Brighter side of blue.
Keep up the good work.
Peace.
Peace.